So what we're doing tomorrow is going to be an exposure to people about a whole different paradigm of ministry. One of the things that we've been saying where we're at is if we simply change addresses, we're wasting, $6 million. And so we want to, tomorrow I'm going to share with you what we're doing. What I didn't realize is behind us, about 4 to 5 years out, are a whole crop of church planters that apparently are using what we're doing, and five churches in the nation that we've figured out so far have shifted to the same paradigm, that they're all going to plant churches using this same model. So we're their guinea pigs. And who knew that that was the case? We were just being called by God. So tomorrow, we're going to talk about that. Now, how many of you have been friends with a minister? Okay. What I'm going to let you in on today is some information that I have come to process over the last 5 or 6 years pretty heavily, because I do not think that we're doing a good job with our ministers as they're in transition. So the reason this is important, and the reason this class isn't about ministers, if you're a minister in here, you'll probably gain something from this. But everyone in the church, and especially people who are around ministers or they're in church leadership, really need to start thinking about our ministers as they are in key transitions in life. How many of you acknowledge that whatever minister you have working at your church now is not going to be there forever? Right? Can we all admit that? Also, that ministry is for a season. Now, that season could be long. It could be 40 years. I work with one of my coworkers who finished up his 37th year this year. That's great. But how rare is that? Right? It's very, very rare. And so some people who have been friends with ministers know this feeling of losing not just their minister, but losing their friend when they move on. Some of you have been close co-workers. My right-hand man, when I was a student minister, is sitting right back there. His name is Chris, too. It's one of the reasons they call me Goldman. It was too confusing for two Chris's to work together. And when we left that work, it was hard for them. It was hard for us. It was hard for all the friend circle, social circle, and the church. And so I think that we do a very poor job with it. But on top of that, we have a new dynamic coming into play with ministers in transition and churches with transition. And a lot of it has to do with an organization I'm involved with. I'm one of the ministering partners for Hope Network. How many of you know who Hope Network is? Okay. The history of that is Len Anderson started Hope Network through all these mentoring circles all around the nation. And as he began to get older, he started to think about, what's going to happen to this ministry when I'm too old to do it? So he selected 12 of us and said, I want you guys to start think tanking. What happens? What's the next chapter in this ministry? And so over time, Lynn stepped out and we selected, however you want to call that. We appointed John Mulliken and Grady King to be our point people. And now that's expanded from the 12 to about 18 partners that would include male and females. We've discovered that we really need to have some mentoring partners that are females. And also, it's come into partnership with interim ministry partners. Now, what happens to a church? How traumatic is it for a church when a pastor leaves? Just think about that for a moment. It's a horrible thing. So much so that years ago, people would say, what's the number one ingredient or key ingredient to a growing, thriving church? And the answer used to be a long-term ministry. In other words, a person who stayed with the church for year after year after year through thick and thin. And that was a big change from when I grew up, because when I grew up, ministers were kind of on a 3-year cycle. They had 3 to 4 years great sermons. They came in, they preached them. At the end of that, everybody could kind of tell because repeats were coming up and it's time for them to head on down the road. But then as our culture became more fluid and members were changing all the time, the need to have some stability in the church through located ministers became critical. I mean, think about it. In California, when I moved to California, it was that about every 3 years, 50% of your congregation changed out because of jobs. By the time I left, every year, 25% of your church changed out because of work location, relocation, life happening. And so it's this constant flux. So what gave you stability was in the leadership, and what gave leadership stability was a core 2 or 3 pastoral staff that were kind of rocks. You could depend on them being there. So we went from that three-year cycle of ministers coming in to where people started thinking ministers coming in need to be at least a 5 to 7 year stay. And then we began to imagine what happens if a minister were to stay longer than that. And we stuck together through thick and thin. But we haven't done a good job of that. Would you say that that's a fair assessment? I think it's a really fair assessment. So if you don't share that opinion with me, you're wrong. It's 2:30 in the afternoon. I had to say some funny things to keep you with me. So I want to talk just for a moment about what's going on in this regard. So what's happening with the entire world of job interviews is online job searches. How many of you hate that? I want some flesh in the game. I don't just want digits on a screen. But even today, churches for intake have started to go to online initial applications, which is opposed to the old days. The old days were that, our preacher's leaving. What are we going to do? And, you know, Elder Bob down at the end of the table said, well, I know a preacher that can preach his way out of two paper bags. You know, let's bring him in. And 2 weeks later, some guy out of somewhere showed up and just started preaching. And again, you'd wait for the 3-4 year cycle and then they'd move on if they made it that long. Churches began to figure out that's not working out too well. So they began to look, especially through the eyes and the magnificent work of Charles Seibert, into what are established denominations doing to prevent this constant turnover. And Charles Seibert began to take that and translate it into our tribal language so that we could understand that before, when a church loses a minister, there's always a reason. And there's a phrase that we say about divorce. It takes two to tango, right? And so what happens when a minister leaves, there's a reason a minister leaves, and that reason is never 100% the minister. It's the environment, it's the church, it's the leadership setting. Whenever a minister leaves, there's something happening in leadership that we all need to pause, take a break, and say, okay, let's get our house in order before we bring somebody else into the house. And so that's led to two key changes. One is that we are hiring consultants to come in and help shepherd that system, which I applaud 100%. If your church is about to go through this tough transition of losing a current minister and hiring the next one, what they say is after a minister leaves, you're hiring your next interim minister. That can be intentional or it can be unintentional. But the longer your current pastor's been there, or current preacher's been there, let's say they've been there 5 to 7 years, your next person coming in is interim. It doesn't matter who they are. Now, they may come in and be there for 3 years, but for those 3 years, what they're going to hear is constantly about the guy that was there before them. And they're going to hear about it when? Every day of their life. Two complaints ministers have. Being told about the guy who left you before, and number two, being told that Francis Chan is a really good preacher. I just want to get that out there, okay? Don't tell your preachers ever again how good Francis Chan is. We all know it. We all get it. Hire Francis Chan if you can, but he's not applying anywhere. And if he does, he'll have to do it online. So a few years ago, we started looking for a student pastor, and we put out online. We go everywhere. Now there are online mechanisms that circumvent the Christian college system. And so churchstaffing.com, there's 3 or 4 of them, and you know, you pay like $350. They send it all through. And I need to tell you, oh, the applications start pouring in. Now, we didn't get a hire who I wanted to hire. We had two gals apply for our student pastor position that were both right around 50, and their number one job reference that they put on there is that they were massage therapists. Now, the elders didn't see the wisdom of having an on-site, on-staff massage therapist. But I was sitting there saying, who cares about the students? Get the massage therapist. We'll all be more relaxed, right? Now, it just went to show is that this online world of applications allow people to apply for jobs with no network, no context, no environmental understanding of what they're applying for. So this has been a challenge. But the second challenge is those of you that are engaging consultants and church consultant groups to help map out the process to replace your minister need to be aware that there is a big disconnect that we in Hope Network see between those processes and the ministers that are looking. So I'm going to try and to describe that as best I can. A church hires a consultant group. One of the ones that I highly recommend is Interim Ministry Partners, Tim Woodruff's group. They come in, they provide you with an interim minister that will come and work with you shepherding through it. They usually pull a consultant like a John Mulliken in for part of that. And they help you figure out the lay of the land and where you need to work on your health and where the church needs to improve before they bring somebody in, all the while providing somebody in your pulpit. It's a great plan. Those processes, though, for hiring often take between 8 and 18 months. As a matter of fact, if a church were to tomorrow start this process and hire someone within 8 months, Tim Woodruff, John Mulliken, all of them would be saying you're moving way too fast. Now, let's look at the other side of the coin. If you're a minister looking for a church, how likely is it you can wait 8 to 18 months to land your next job? It doesn't work. You got to eat. You got to feed your family. And the reason you're looking for a job is because your environment, your current context, somehow isn't satisfactory or hasn't worked out. So, how many ministers do you think are fairly wounded from their given work situation, no matter what it is? Anybody want to take a stab at the percentage of ministers that are wounded, no matter where they are? 80. 85, 100. The elder's wife has the right answer. 100%. Because, in fact, our Savior, we call Him one who bears wounds. Through His wounds, we are healed. I promise you that if you have a minister doing their job, they are wounded all the time. Now, that level could be, insignificant. I've been fairly sheltered in my ministry time, but those wounds are all over the map. Those wounds come dominantly from where? Where do the wounds that the minister experiences, where do they dominantly come from? From the church. And so it leaves you in this real interesting predicament as a minister. So let me let you into the world of ministers for some time. So I had one gal. This is a very funny thing. Some of you know I'm from a hybrid church, right? Christian Church, Church Christ. So I decided a few years ago, I bet I could play drums. And I think I should be playing drums. Because how much fun would that be to play drums and then preach in the same service? That's kind of how warped I am. So I undertook this, and I finished playing drums. And this gal just kind of matter-of-factly, it's in between first and second service of three services. And so second service is a cappella at the time. So I get off the drums, I'm kind of ready for the a cappella service and everything, and I ask a couple of people, I say, so would you tweak anything or anything? And she literally looks at me and she goes, I don't think you've ever said one thing as a preacher that's ever encouraged me or taught me anything, but I think you're a fine drum player. Yeah, thank you. I got to get that on the tape. Very nicely done. It's like, whoa! Now, how many of you on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being really hurts, scale of 1, big deal, but where do you think that lies? 11, 12, somebody's saying 8, 9. For me, I'm a little bit thick-skinned and hard-headed and just a tad bit arrogant, so I kind of took it as a 7.5, 8, but it stuck with me. I was like, wow, how am I supposed to get up and preach at the next service with that kind of comment? Those kind of weird comments happen unnoticed by most people in the church all the time. I'll tell you one from my first work in California that is a very special congregation to us. I had a guy, and I'm not going to throw him under the bus totally. I'm going to throw him under the bus, and I'm going to pull him out and resurrect him, if you will. We had a gentleman who, he was the guy early in the morning, kind of got everything set up. and everything. And when I was leaving that church after about six and a half years, it was really hard. We cried the whole way from the Bay Area up to Sacramento. But when I was leaving, I saw him last time, and I said, here's a list of everything I've been doing that I could think of, you know, want to make sure you guys got it, because I'm like a gap filler. So from the time I walk in the morning, I'm doing things. And he always had this phrase, every time I'd go on vacation, or when I finally left, he would say the same thing. This church did really well before Chris Goldman, and this church is going to do really well after Chris Goldman. And I was like, thanks. I appreciate that. Best compliment I ever got, in the top 10 at least, was a couple years later. I was invited to come back to preach there for some special reason, so I dropped in and everything, and he came over and grabbed me and said, I want to tell you something. So what? He said, you know, for the first 6 months you were gone, all kinds of things didn't happen. All these weird little things. We couldn't figure out what was going wrong. And we started enumerating a list of things that you didn't even know you were doing. And he said, I will tell you, we weren't okay after you left. Heads up. Any human you remove out of relationship of any community will be felt. Now, we tease about it, we joke about it. But the truth is, if we could learn to cultivate that appreciation, not just allow for it, cultivate that appreciation, we could actually discover something that a lot of other churches would tell you if they could stand up here and talk to you, their representatives. Is if you could have a pastor come and stay and serve through decades rather than through years, what you would benefit in the church is untold. So that's where I'm trying to help us get a little bit. So I'm going to ask Fred Ricker if he could help pass those out. John, would you help him pass those out? I want everybody to get one of these handouts. So in this is, by the way, this is all about love. How do we love each other better? And I'm going to talk about ministers and the ownership that they have, and churches and the ownership that they have. And I'm especially excited that a bunch of you raised your hand when I said, how many of you are friends of ministers? Because you have a lot of power and influence. And so this is how they'll know that you're my disciples. If you do what? If you have love one for another. And consequently, that includes people who are ministers. So what I did is I began working with our group at Hope Network and asking the question, what are the key transitional moments for ministers? Because the minister, again, doesn't have 8 to 18 months to find a position. Usually, how many weeks does a minister have to find a new job? Can somebody tell me that? Two? I love that. There are some churches, by the way, give 2 weeks. But most of the churches are going to give 8 to 10 weeks. Now, that may sound like a lot, but finding a position in ministry is not like finding a position in anything else. The only place you can search for a ministry job is nationally. So whatever you're going to engage in, and most of the churches that are taking in information and applicants won't even talk to you personally for 6 to 8 weeks. So when you hear that, our process is going to take 8 to 18 months, and on the other hand, you have our elders saying, we're going to be very generous and give you 8 to 10 weeks, the minister is caught in the middle unless he finds the rare church that has gone through their first set of candidates and cut them all off and shut them down, and they're starting to get desperate. We're not finding who we're looking for. Unless you come into that moment right at that right time, you're going to find yourself in no man's land. I have come to the conclusion that I can't stay where I'm at. I've also come to the conclusion that there is no place for me to go. We are losing ministers as fast as we're losing churches. I hear over and over and over, there's just hardly any ministers out there applying for jobs. And I hear over and over and over, I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm applying at all these churches and no one is calling me. No one's talking to me. I'm taking a job doing real estate. I'm taking a job doing insurance. I'm taking a job doing anything I can to make ends meet. And then guess what happens, guys? This old thing that most of us don't believe, that if ministers were to go and get a secular job, they would actually do better off financially because they have the people skills the world's looking for that the world can't find. Those ministers begin to find out that I am more valued by a pizza organization or by Starbucks or by Intel or by Boeing. And suddenly they're sitting there going, I've been making what? Doing this? And all of a sudden, I had this, and I can know at the end of the day I did my job and I'm going to have it until they do massive layoffs. It's a big deal. So I was tasked with the idea of asking what are the key transitions. I came up with seven, but for our discussion today, I want to look at five of them that I think are critical. And the first transition, I've named these T1 through T5. Transition one is I'm about to graduate from school. I ain't never had a job working in a full-time church. And what is it that is around the corner for me? It is at this first transition that Hope Network and our mentoring partners would like to engage formal coaching and mentoring for our outgoing students. This is where we want to begin it because we think if you could start, how old are you? 31 years old. So where'd you graduate from? Duke Divinity School. We believe that if we could catch him coming out of Duke and provide some coaching and mentoring that is not from academia. This is really key, and this is no knock on academia. Academics live in a different world than the rest of us. Would you agree with that? It's a very different world. If you talk to any minister that's gone into the academic world after preaching for a period of time, it's a big adjustment. They're like, wow, this is a whole different world. And the same is true coming out of academia into the real world. For example, in the academic world, what is the most valued thing for a characteristic for any person in the academic world? I wish personality was. But as a student, what does the school system value most? Grades and intellect, correct? Do you know that grades and intellect mean nothing when you attend your first elders meeting? It means nothing. But I can write a paper. Who cares? What becomes primary is something you don't get it from academia. It's leadership. For example, I was recently asked by a professor at one of the colleges, if you could go back and do your education over at Abilene Christian, what would you change about your undergraduate degree? I could answer that question immediately. I said, across the campus is a business school at Abilene Christian, same as at Harding, same as at OC, that are absolutely training people for not just academics, but for leadership. Instead of making me take film appreciation so I could learn to critique a movie, send me across campus to the business department to learn what they're learning, because most of the people that are going to be in my elder board meetings are going to be businessmen who understand that language, not my language. Try this sometime. Young man, what's your recommendation for what we do next in the church? Well, I do have 2 years of Greek. Let me tell you what's next. It goes nowhere. Leadership training for ministry only happens for most people during summer internships. Leadership training is needed. So what you're going to notice is under here are six, each of these transitions, there are six recommended coaching sessions. The first one is the big shift from school to work. We think that every outgoing graduate needs to have a coaching session on what it means to shift out of school into a full-time ministry position. Another discussion is the difference between network or the value of networking and leading. These are key. Like in any industry, it's not what you know, it's who you know. And that is especially true in the church world. It's especially true in the church world. The third one is the value of mentoring and coaching. And we'll talk a little bit about coaching in just a moment. Continued education, how do you get it? And what should you negotiate for? We're not taught negotiation skills for ministry majors, and that's a shame. Because I know a lot of ministers that get out and are not coached enough. I was coached by a guy by the name of Jim Mankin, and he told me specific things I would need for ministry. He said, when they ask you, is there anything else you need? You tell them, I need a budget to travel and go to things like Pepperdine, Abilene Lectures. I need to go to continued education like the Global Leadership Summit. These kinds of things need to be funded by the church. Otherwise, you're going to dry up on the vine and people are going to come up and tell you what you already know. Man, your lessons are seeming a little bit tired lately. You think? Try outputting week after week, hour after hour, over and over with the mix of what ministry is. And if you don't have continued education, you will dry up. Now, commercial. If you're part of a leadership team in a church, you need to ask the question. It can be very friendly asked. I attended this crazy class at Pepperdine. What do we do financially for continued education for our ministers? Because we know we don't pay them enough to really even retire. So how can we take care of them better? Do you know that $2,500 a year in continued education is on the high side of what churches offer? Yeah, it's on the high side. Ministers need a place that they fill their tank that's not a podcast. Tomorrow, for example, I'm one of 60 that got their name in to sit with N.T. Wright, 1 on 30. Those 30 minutes for me will be like gold. I don't know who dropped out that I got to go in, but I evilly and selfishly just praised God for whatever calamity hit there. And I will go in there. I will soak up every minute of it, right? So these six sessions, continued education, realistic expectations, starting points. So here they are, the five key overviews. The first big transition is I'm leaving school. I'm about to have to get a job. What does that look like? The second one is I'm beginning to question the viability of staying in the work that I'm at. Now, this is a real conundrum for ministers. First church I ever worked at, I'll never forget this. I get the job, I'm there the first Sunday, one of the four elders walks up, he puts his arm around me and he says this, it's good to have you aboard, can I give you a bit of advice? I said, sure, go ahead. He said, if you ever think about even looking at another church job, we'll fire you on the spot. So if you're ever thinking of leaving, make sure you have the job before you tell me. We're glad you're here. I'm not making this stuff up. When I interviewed at the Livermore Church, no one at my church, especially the elders, knew I was even there. And when I gave them 4 days' notice, they said, why didn't you give us more time? And I said, because you guys told me you wouldn't support me if I was even looking. They said, well, that's true. So, well, I got a baby due in 3 weeks. So it is set up, our system is often set up for failure and destruction, right? So how many of you have ever had to change your job in your careers? Okay, is anybody in the room ever gotten a promotion? Okay, what was your first big promotion?
From an entry-level person to the first level of supervision.
First level of supervision, okay. And that was a bad thing, right? People were angry at you? They were mad. Do you understand that that's the difference between ministry and almost any other profession? That if a church were to look at you and say, hey, we think you're ready for a bigger, you've been faithful with where you're at. We think that God's ready to entrust you with something bigger and more. And we want to be, it's not a celebration most of the time, except for the minister. It is a matter of stress. It's one of the few positions that changing your jobs can be seen as a deceptive move. And isn't that ironic? We're in kingdom work, right? So what we have to do is we have to get to a place where a minister, first of all, can very honestly and openly speak to his elders. I was blessed that my second full-time work was the Livermore, and now the, what's the name now? Tri-Valley Church of Christ. And I had, here's one of my elders that was there, I had a very mature group of elders that always felt that I was going to move on to other things eventually. So when I brought it up to them, they were like, we want you to stay. Here's what we'll do to keep you to stay. But at the same time, we want to give you freedom to explore where God is taking you when. And so it was the least amount of trauma. We've got to get that way with every church leadership. Because ministers, I already asked you, how many of you believe your ministers at some time are going to leave? You all raised your hand. Here's the point. Ministers need to be able to leave well so the church can healthily heal quicker. Okay? So transition number two is a tough one because a minister begins to ask, can I stay in this job? Or elders are starting to ask, can our minister stay in this job? And we would all do ourselves a favor if we would be able to talk about it as adults. Transition number three, they decided or I decided it's time. And so now I'm transitioning out of that role. The fourth one is I'm transitioning into a new role. It's not my first job, but this is a brand new role. And I'm going to talk about that one quite a bit, a little bit. And then the last one is something no one that we know of Hope Network are really doing a great job of. How do we talk about retirement? Most ministers are like I am, got out of school. You know, you're 22 years old. You get out of school. You meet with your elder board and they say, so you got to make a choice in the first 12 months about being in or out. Like, what do you mean in or out? You know, what did I sign on for? They're like, Social Security or no Social Security? Well, Social Security, a good idea. It would be if your employer paid the other 7.5%, but we don't pay it. You know, so that means all 15% out of your pocket. Well, you're my elder. What do you recommend? I recommend you sign this form that say you have spiritual problems with it, which is really a way for the church to get out of their responsibility of normal retirement. So you sign it. Once you sign it, for the rest of your life, you're out of Social Security unless they do amnesty. So as ministers are approaching retirement, you wonder why ministers don't want to retire. Most of them can't afford to retire. And so we want to start that conversation about how we can do that more healthily. Now, there's some things that I want to talk about here, and I want to give you some sample coaching questions. What we've outlined that's on that first, on the page you're looking at, are six specific coaching sessions that Hope Network would like to provide for ministers that are in transition. And we would like you to help us get the word out, especially in soon-to-be graduates or now graduating students that don't have their job yet, or they're terrified because they got their job and they're like, now what? One of my friends, one of my friends from Abilene, when we graduated, he went on to get his master's degree from Fuller. And we were buddies, and he got a job working in youth ministry, and I'd already been doing a couple years of youth ministry. And he calls me one day. He's done all the studies and then some. He got his master's degree at Fuller, very well respected. And he calls me up one day and he goes, so this is my fourth week on the job. It was May. And I said, yeah, how's it going? He goes, it's going good. And I can tell there's just like part of the conversation I'm missing. So what's up? He goes, what do I do? I said, what do you mean, what do you do? He goes, the schools aren't out yet. I'm a student minister, so I don't have any students. And I've walked the halls of this church building 20 times every day. What do I do now? And I said, have you got your summer calendar printed ready for your parent meeting before the summer starts? You know, should I have one of those? Oh, yes, you should. I say, have you got your fall curriculum and everything for the fall set up? Because once summer hits, it's a blur. You're going to emerge out of August exhausted, and if you don't plan ahead. So I had to kind of line him out on what to do because no one teaches you this stuff. So what we want to do is we want to engage these young men and women coming into the ministry at this stage to start coaching and mentoring. Now, there's a difference between coaching and mentoring. Coaching basically is a series of carefully thought out questions that allow a client, we call them, a client to walk through and come up with their own solutions. The problem with it is you can lead a horse to water, but can't make him drink. And we've all been clients of good coaching where the coach knows where you need to get and it's killing them and you're sitting there not getting it. So mentoring allows you to speak into it and say, hey, could I offer you a nugget here? And do that. So we like to combine at Hope Network. We believe the coach-mentor combination is the ideal combination that we want to have here. So ministers, I have some advice for ministers. Actively engage the coaching and mentoring when you're at a transitional moment. Don't think about it. Actively engage it, because what happens is if you don't and things don't go well, you will shut down And when you shut down, the dangers that come from a shutdown are critical. This is where you have ministers' families where he's not working and he falls into a deep depression, and there's no way for the family to climb out of that hole for a decade, at least financially. Shutdown is a huge danger. So ministers, be bold enough to engage it. Secondly, approach your leadership if the situation is safe. Leaders make the situation safe. But ministers should be able to go to a loving elder or leader in the church and say, I need to talk to you about what's going on in my life. And I need a safe place that I can go. Let me flip this into a different world. My son is a new attorney in Manhattan, right? Passed the bar last fall, got all added in New York Bar Association, all that kind of stuff. He's already told me of probably a dozen conversations he's had with his boss and with his direct supervisors about being headhunted and about how they expect him to get great offers and for him to come to them and say, hey, I got this offer for $10,000, $15,000 more. What are you going to do? And they talk about it very openly in their department. It's not some kind of betrayal. And somehow, understanding the personal people relationship of churches, we need to get to a place where our ministry staff can come to us not to leverage an improvement of their situation, but to be honest about what is happening to them in their sometimes darkest hours. The third thing I'd say for ministers is avoid self-reliance. I have done too much counseling and coaching of ministers in the last couple of years that have come too late in the game. They decided to set out on their own. They didn't seek consultation. They didn't seek coaching. And now they've made some mistakes that they cannot back out of. I'm lucky. How many of the men in the room are the ones that will not stop and ask directions? It's a bunch of you, right? Ministers, don't be that guy. When you know that you're in a transitional moment, reach out immediately and say, I need directions. Because when you are in that situation transition, you rarely can see wholly and healthily. You've got to know what to do. The last one is instigate coaching mentoring sessions. One thing that is true about all coaching mentoring sessions is they are client instigated. For those of us who do coaching and mentoring, if we set up an appointment with the coach client and they don't call, it's their responsibility. So if you're on the end of this, you need to understand, even if you're in a full-blown depression, you have to instigate those calls. That's one part of the ownership you have to take. Now, churches, on the other side, be aware that your minister is going through a transition. Try to have those intuitive feelers out that something's going on. Understand the isolation that they're feeling. They work in an environment that sharing what they're going through is typically not healthy. Right. So if a minister says to the, you know, everybody in church is always like, we just need to be transparent and open with each other. And you all like that until a minister gets up and says, the people I work with are frankly horrible. And I'm thinking, I got to get out of here. You know, and he just starts being transparent. The whole church is going, you know, crucify. I don't know what the words actually would be, but that's kind of the same thing. You know, we want you to be more like Jesus. So we're going to do that. Thank you for getting that. Three of you got that joke. Understand the isolation that comes when the minister's feeling that and they feel like they have to retract. Third thing is secure consultants for the church, which churches are doing really well, and for the minister. I want to tell you how proud I am of my elders. We were going through a transition with one of our ministers on staff, and one of the first things they said is, how much would it cost for us to hire coaching for him for whatever he wants it for? And I said, honestly, a lot of people do it for free, but I know some guys that if you paid like $100 a session, $75, $100 a session, it's top-notch coaching. And they said, we are willing to make that investment without even any hesitation. So what they did is they hired that coach for that minister for six weeks, I think it is, right up front, with a automatic he could re-up on it at our expense until he figured out where he was. Am I trying to stay? I need coaching to stay. Am I trying to leave? I need coaching. Am I trying to make a career change? I need coaching for that. So he was able to steer that and come back here and there and say, hey, could I have three more sessions on the church's dime? No minister that I know of has a bank of cash sitting for coaching. I will tell you that those of us at Hope Network, if you have somebody that has no coaching budget and the church absolutely won't help, we're going to make sure you get the coaching. We're going to make sure that happens. But if you're going to pay, you know, $10,000 for a church consultant over a year to help the church be healthy, what's $750 to help the minister be healthy too? It will save all kinds of pain. Work towards mutual health. If I had any advice for minister and church together, work towards mutual health. Because we're all in this about the kingdom of God, right? And no one wants to see the church hurt, and no one should want to see the minister hurt. And then the other thing is consider the control. And I have this explained on your third sheet there. I think, be aware that ministers rarely have control of their relocation timeline. The church has a lot more control than they do. Now, I already talked about why coach and mentor, but I want to give you an example about how this coaching and mentoring can be really beneficial and leave you with this story. I had a minister that was in his coaching session. We had started coaching because he was in transition number two. He wasn't sure about his viability, and he called up and he said, I need some help here. So we began talking. This is purely coaching. Then eventually he invited me into the mentoring. And so we had a coaching session that was very awkward because he called me and he said, you're not going to believe this. I am calling you from our moving truck. My wife's got the kids in the car behind me. I'm in the U-Haul, and we're pulling out right now. And I said, well, where are you? He said, I'm like 30 miles from the state line. And I said, oh, this is perfect. He goes, why? And I said, because I want to talk to you about one of the coaching sessions for making this transition. I said, okay, shoot. Here's what I want you to consider. What are the stories from your current ministry position, I asked him, that need to stay, that need to not cross the state line? He goes, what do you mean by that? I said, what are the stories that you currently tell about your pain and your hurt that if you take them across the state line to your next work will undercut your effectiveness? He goes, oh, I know those stories. He could name them 1, 2, and 3. I said, so what you're looking at is learning to retire stories. Learning to retire stories is a skill. I have this story that talks about my battle wounds and my hurts and my undone stuff that I can never fully heal until I retire that story. And a church work, a new church work, can be completely undercut by those kinds of stories. So then we processed that for about 30 minutes. I said, now let's flip it. What are 3 stories since you're retiring 3? Tell me 3 stories from your current work that was painful enough for you to leave that are stories that will help you begin your new work. And he goes, oh, yeah, I've got this story where, you know, as the youth pastor and they asked me to be part of this big youth rally. And I'd never really spoken before. And they asked me, they trust me speak. And I got up and I discovered, even though I'm kind of an administrative guy, I can teach the Word of God. And I didn't know I had that gift. And I said, so how does that come into play with you? He said, well, where I'm going is a large church. I'm going to be executive pastor there and working with small groups. And it helps me convince other people that they have gifts that they probably don't know yet. I said, now there's a story you can tell. So we went through and we got those stories. Good coaching asks those kinds of good questions and helps us process a better departure, a better landing, and a far more successful start. Our plea from Hope Network is let's start moving this direction with transition number one right now, with people who are graduating. But that said, if you're sitting in here and you're a minister in tough transition, do not hesitate to call. And I'd also say this. If you've already landed, but you didn't land well, or you didn't land whole, chances are some good coaching can get that corrected pretty quickly. Because this isn't rocket science. This is heart healing stuff. And the beauty of God is He helps that happen at any moment in life. Yes? All right. Thank you for coming today. Thank you for your time. I have to end on time because they said I had to. So blessings. If you have any questions, come up after. Tomorrow we'll jump in the other. Thank you.